of Shvat, which is coming up on Wednesday. It's coming Wednesday, not too many days from now, a week from now, basically. The yahrzeit site of the previous Lubavitcher Rebbe in 1950, and also the day that the Rebbe became Rebbe in 1951, officially accepted the leadership of becoming Rebbe. Every year on 10th of Shvat, the Rebbe would make a big Fabrengen, talk about his father-in-law, and also included in the Fabrengen, he would explain one chapter from the last essay that the previous Rebbe wrote before he passed away. And that essay had 20 chapters, and every year the Rebbe would explain one chapter. And the Rebbe put a lot of weight to that essay, understandably so. The story behind that essay is that the previous Rebbe, the last years of his life, was not able to speak. It was very difficult. If you stood close to him, you could understand. It was very hard for him to speak. But interestingly, he was able to write. And he used to write his Torah thoughts instead of what our Rebbe did, which is mostly speak, and other people would write it. The previous Rebbe wrote it himself. And then he wrote an essay, and he would prepare in advance several installments if there were a few occasions coming up. So, for example, his grandmother's yahrzeit is the 10th of Shvat. And then comes up another yahrzeit, and then comes up Purim, and then comes up his father's yahrzeit later on. So he prepared in advance a series of five chapters for each of those four occasions. And it was to be published at those occasions. He published the first one, and it was a Shabbos morning, the 10th of Shvat, and unfortunately, he himself passed away at the same day as his grandmother's yahrzeit. And the other chapters he had already prepared in advance, and the Rebbe therefore said that these 20 chapters that he had last written are his so-called ethical will and testament, his last instructions to Chassidim, which clearly they were. And in those chapters, you will find the answers that Rebbe said to any question that a person has in any aspect. You just have to figure out how it applies to you and what is the message. So therefore, sentence from Shir HaShirim, Song of Songs. And Shir HaShirim is a poem that was written by Shlomo HaMelech, King Solomon, King David, David HaMelech's son. It is a description of the love between Hashem and the Jewish people. And it's literally talking about the love between two engaged, a man, a boy and a girl, who are trying to get married and are having difficulties and trying to establish a home, but there's all kinds of problems. But it's a poem that the Gemara tells us. Initially, the Chachamim did not want to include it in the Tanakh because they felt it was some kind of a secular poem. But then they began to realize that this is not a secular poem at all. This is the story of Hashem and the Jewish people, and it goes through, it's a poem, so you have to explain it, you have to understand it like every other poem, and the references are not to be taken literally or at face value. But it is a very, very mystical, very deep poem, and it turns out many of the deepest concepts in Kabbalah and in the Zohar are from Shir HaShirim, because the metaphors, the analogies, the stories that Shlomo HaMelech is telling us in Shir HaShirim are very deep and only for the so-called initiated. And that's exactly what the Kabbalah was for. The Kabbalah was only for those people with a lot of background, so that a person reading it initially would actually be able to make a mistake and think it's talking about some kind of a, you know, secular thing. But this is not the case. So one of the psukim, one of the verses in Shir HaShirim says, I've come into my garden, my beloved bride. It's not my sister, my bride. It's a bad translation, but my sister here means my beloved bride. So Hashem says to the Jewish people that finally I have come back to my garden, to my place, Gani. Gani, Gan is a garden. Gani is my garden, my happy place. If you want to translate it into modern idiom, you would say, my dearly beloved, my dear wife, my dear beloved, I finally come back to with you to our happy place. What is our happy place? What is my garden, my place where I delight, where I have extreme pleasure and excitement, my happy place? This is the Beis HaMikdash. So Shlomo HaMelech is telling us as follows. Hashem is telling the Jewish people that from the time that I created the world, with Adam and Chava, I thought that I'm going to have a happy relationship with my creations, with my people. Adam and Chava, these are my people. I created them, Hashem says, and I wanted, why did I create people? I created people in order to have pleasure, in order to have nachas. Same reason a person has, a parent has a child. Why do you go and have a child, raise a child, go through the whole expense? Not to have tzaris, to have nachas, plain and simple. However you define nachas, I mean, clearly there is a baseline definition of nachas, which means that that person, that child, is listening to you. That child is continuing your agendas and your plans and your hopes and your dreams. That's what nachas means, right? Pride and joy. Nachas means pride. Why would you be proud of a kid who's doing the opposite? So Hashem says that Adam and Chava didn't give me nachas. Why? They ate from the tree of knowledge. Right away, boom, they insulted me. I asked them something and they didn't do it. The next few generations, they did even worse. They started worshiping idols. And then they started beating each other up. And then they started killing each other. Then they started murdering and raping and pillaging. And I couldn't take it, Hashem said. How could I be in the same place with these, my children, my kids, my creation, who is giving me tzaris? So what did Hashem say? It said what Hashem did, what a parent does. If my kid is not giving me nachas, if my kid is giving me actually tzaris and aggravation, I'm not going to spend time with them. I'm going to go, they're still my kid. You know, I'll give them whatever I can give them on a minimal basis. But I am not going to be visiting them. I'm not going to take them into my house. I'm not going to say, you're kicked out of my house. I'm kicked out of your house. We have no relationship. And eventually what happens is, if finally somebody comes and says, no, I want to keep with the agenda. I want be a good kid. So Hashem, the father, the parent says, okay, so let's get together. We'll meet once, we'll meet twice. We'll see how it goes. We're not going to rush things. We'll see how it goes. If it keeps going good, then I don't want to get burnt a second time. Hashem said the same thing to us. Abraham came and Abraham did amazing stuff. He brought people, he himself came back to monotheistic belief. He brought other people back to monotheistic belief. He taught people about tzedakah, about having guests, about all kinds of beautiful, wonderful things. Hashem said, I like this. I'm beginning to be happy. Yitzchak continued and Yaakov continued and Yaakov had a son, Levi, and Levi continued. Levi had a son, Kehas, and Kehas continued. Kehas had a son, Amram, and Amram continued. And Amram had a son, Moshe. Shem said, Moshe, he's the seventh one. And now that I have seven generations of nachas, seven generations of obedience, because as we know, the tribe of Levi never were slaves to Paro in Egypt. The tribe of Levi did not worship idols when the other Jews worshiped idols later on by the golden calf. They were loyal, always loyal to Hashem. So Hashem said, I have seven generations of nachas. Now I'm warmed up. Now I'm feeling happy. So I want you, Moshe, to build a structure. I want you to build a structure that's going to be a place where it will cement my happiness, cement our relationship, where it will give me a place, Hashem says, that I will be able to feel this is my happy place. And that is the Beis HaMikdash. The first Beis HaMikdash that Moshe built was not the Beis HaMikdash that we had eventually in Yerushalayim. It was, that was built by David HaMelech hundreds of years later. But it was the Mishkan. And the Mishkan was the portable Beis HaMikdash, the portable sanctuary, portable temple that Moshe was instructed very carefully by Hashem with precise, not only architect plans, not only dimensions and what should be, and the furniture, but also which materials to use, Hashem says. So the Kabbalah explains, Citizen Kabbalah explains, that the materials that Hashem used, let alone the dimensions and the construction and the furniture, which are all specified in, as you very well know, in very, very much detail, a lot of detail, almost excessively understanding hard to understand why there's so much detail in the Chumash, which we're going to get up to in a few weeks, not too many weeks from now. The story from Truma, Tetzava, Yakel, Kude, Kisiso, a little bit. 4.5 parshas talking about the construction of this Beis HaMikdash. Clearly, all the detail that is going into this, the construction of this first Beis HaMikdash, the Mishkan, is important and is instructive and, in fact, is a basis for the relationship. So if Hashem is saying that I waited all these years, that means from creation until Moshe is 2,448 years, because that's when the Torah was given. That's when the Mishkan was built, in the year 2448. 2,500 years Hashem waited, almost, to have a structure, a place where the relationship between the human and the creator, or better stated, between the creator and the human, is going to be cemented, celebrated, more than cemented and celebrated, even, is going to be evident, is going to be realized, is going to be apparent, is going to be felt, tangible, palpable, any other word you want to use. So imagine Hashem is saying to human beings, which is us, through Moshe, our teacher, I want to have a structure. I want to have this place that when you walk into that place, you will be so overcome with spirituality, with feeling. It will be so clear to you, the relationship between me, the creator, and you, the created, you, the people, that this is going to be amazing. And it's going to be a place, Hashem says to us, that you will be able to do things to further increase, cement, highlight, uplift, again, whatever word you want to use, that relationship. It's not just going to be a passive place. Today we would say there's an immersive experience. So there are museums where you walk into the museum, and you walk in the museum, and what happens? You see this stuff behind the glass cases. Or even if you go into the Museum of Natural History and there's stuffed animals that are not behind glass cases, it's all, you're looking at stuff from the past. It doesn't, you have no interaction. There's nothing for you to do there to further any kind of anything. You're just looking. It's informational, which is wonderful and important. But all it is informational. But imagine if you have an immersive experience, like the way they build science museums. Not only do you see the stuff, but you're also getting excited about it because you yourself are creating. You're creating the history, so to speak. You're able to do experiments or different things. So it's an immersive experience, a different kind of museum. It's not a museum, in fact, and it's a mechanism for you. It's like a gym, almost. It's a mechanism for you to get healthier and to get stronger and so on. And that's what Hashem said, I want the Mishkan should be. I want the Beis HaMikdash should not just be a place of a museum where you look and you say, oh yeah, here's God locked up in a box, and this is us human beings looking from the distance. No, 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 Hashem says, I want it to be an experience where you go in and you actually do things, and you increase that relationship, you increase that feeling, you increase that appreciation, you enhance your own spiritual state of mind and state of being. And therefore, we understand that the construction of the Mishkan, primarily, which is given a lot of ink, as we just said, is very important. But the construction of the Mishkan is only important in order to explain the ultimate purpose of the Mishkan, which is enhancing the spiritual experience between humans and God, enhancing that relationship, making it clear to us that we are, in fact, connected and livened and just we're just a piece of spirituality, really, and we shouldn't live such a materialistic life. That's what the Mishnah was all about. That's what the Beis HaMikdash was all about. So this essay of 20 chapters explains. It starts by explaining these concepts that I just mentioned to you, but then it concludes on a very, very deep level explaining that the Mishkan is not supposed to remain the Mishkan. What does it mean, the Mishkan is not supposed to remain the Mishkan? Hashem said, I don't want this immersive experience to just be a building. The purpose of having the building, the Mishkan, or later on the Beis HaMikdash, is that this immersive experience should spread. It should spread to the city of Yerushalayim. It should spread to the country of Eretz Yisrael. And then it should spread to the entire world. And it should spread to all people. And it should spread to all animals and all levels. And the four levels of creation, which are the inanimate, the vegetable, the animal, the human, all the four levels of creation should be permeated, should be soaked, should be through and through with this realization of connection to Hashem. This is Mashiach. In a word, this is Mashiach. This is the realization of Mashiach. When Mashiach comes, the Mashiach says in the language of the prophets that lo yikonef od morecha, Hashem, your master, will no longer be hidden. V'hayu einecha ra'ot et morecha, your eyes will see your master. You will see spirituality. It will no longer be a cover-up. The world, olam, which means he'alem, in the Hebrew word means cover-up or concealment, will no longer be olam. It's going to be, instead of the world being a concealment, the world will be a magnifying glass. We spoke about this many times. Instead of glass, you can have glass in many forms. Glass can be opaque. It can cover up the light behind it. It could be painted over like a mirror, but all you see is yourself, and you don't even see the other side. It could be opaque, where it's not a mirror, but it's sort of fogged up. The glass is finely scratched, so you can't see the light through it, but you can see that there is light behind it. It could be clear. So it's like a regular window pane, where you don't, nothing is blocked, but the glass itself doesn't really do anything. It just doesn't block. But then glass, if it's ground the right way, could actually be a magnifying glass. And it makes the things on the other side bigger, clearer, more able to be recognized. So Hashem says the world is the same thing. As long as we approach the world with the idea in our head, the wrong idea, that the world, materialism, is the goal, is our focus. That's a mirror. All we see is ourselves. All we see by looking at the world is, what can I do for myself? How can I enjoy myself more? How can I get better, fatter, richer, this and that, more self-centered, and so on? That's a mirror. If we're lucky and we follow the Torah and we understand what our position is in the world, then we're able to have glass that is opaque. Opaque means you can see there's light on the other side. You can see it's not all about yourself. If you're more lucky and you're able to really incorporate, this is takes a lot of work. This is not natural, not normal, because us human beings, Hashem created us in the language of, again, Shlomo HaMelech, Adam, Ayar, Pera, Yulad. Man was created like a wild donkey. That's what our Torah tells us this. Tanakh tells us this. We were created to be selfish, and it takes work not to be selfish. That's Hashem. Hashem wants us to work. He didn't give it to us easy. So if we are lucky, and we are able then to see that the world is not, in fact, just for ourselves, the world is not just a place where there's a glimmer of spirituality, but in fact, the world is Hashem. The world is intended for us to do mitzvahs, to help other people. That's why we have resources to be able to daven. That's why we have the ability to speak, not to talk lashon hara, the ability to go and celebrate our thing. That's why we have nice houses and nice dining rooms and living rooms, so we should be inviting our family and friends and so on. So if we're able to see that, then that's clear glass. That's clear glass. So at least the world doesn't block anything. Then we can clearly see spirituality. But if we're really on a very high level, and this again is a Mashiach level, then not only does the spirituality of the world not block, not only does it give us the ability to do mitzvahs, But we can actually see how great Hashem is, that Hashem can create such an amazing world. That's the level of a tzaddik, really. We know we talk about it, but we can't really see it. At least I don't know if you can see it. That's a wonderful thing. But that's a level. When Mashiach comes, we will be able, tzaddikim are able to look at the world. They don't see the block. Instead, they see the holy. They see the blockage. Instead, they see the energy of the world. And that's Mashiach. We're all going to see it. That's what it says in the Nevi'im. The prophets tell us that when Mashiach comes, we will all see this thing. As a matter of fact, our Medrash tells us, and we're going to read this a couple of weeks from now in the portion of B'Shalach, by the splitting of the sea, we all saw it. So it's not something that never happened. It's going to be, when Mashiach comes, it's going to be a repetition of what we already experienced as a nation during the splitting of the sea, the crossing of the Red Sea. We all saw this. We all saw that the world is the greatness of Hashem through the spirit, the physicality of the world. That's how we recognize the greatness of Hashem. So this, therefore, is what the previous Rebbe explains in these 20 chapters. Again, he starts with explaining the construction of the Mishkan and how, in fact, the construction of the Mishkan is Hashem's plan to have his happy place, his place where creator and human beings can, so to speak, have a relationship with each other, and not just a passive relationship, but an immersive relationship, a relationship that actually is augmented, is increased, is facilitated through the Mishkan and through the service in the Mishkan, which was the Karbanot. There were two things that done in the Mishkan. Number one, there were animal offerings. And number two, there was incense offerings. There was ketores, incense offerings and animal offerings. And the Rebbe explains in this 20 chapters what the importance of each one was and how, what they accomplished. And then, as I mentioned to you, the Rebbe explains how to take that energy and to apply it to the world at large until we have the ultimate goal of Hashem, which is that not just the Beis HaMikdash should be a place, his happy place, and that's where it should be end all and be all and concentrated and focused, and that's it. As soon as you step out of Israel, right away, you're in what's called Eretz HaAmim, the land of the nations, which is Tuma, which is impurity, but that in fact, it should be not that way. It should be, the whole world should be a place of holiness, and the Beis HaMikdash holiness should extend to the whole entire world. The Rebbe explains that Hashem gives us, meaning us, this generation, our last generation, the most energy that was ever given in order to accomplish this goal. And that's where these 20 essays end on a very big high, where the Rebbe explains that this plan that Hashem has, Hashem doesn't just leave it up to us to figure it out. Hashem gives us the energy to make it happen. All we have to do, which is a big deal still, it's not just an all, we have to sign up for the job. And we have to actually do it, and it's a big deal still, but the energies are there for the taking if we just agree to sign up for the job. And the Rebbe explains that when a king wants to win a war, a king, if he really wants to win the war, and he's some enemy or some opponent who he really absolutely has, you know, he must win against this person, he takes his most precious resources that he's saving up for who knows when and that his ancestors even saved up, and he completely opens up his treasure houses and all of his energies, and he gives it to who? To the lowest foot soldier. Not to his generals, because they don't need it. They're not on the battlefield. He takes his most expensive stuff. He sells it. He buys weapons. He buys horses and whatever it is. Nowadays, you would say he buys guns and tanks and technology and all kinds of stuff. And he has to win the war. So you take all your stuff and you put it to the task of winning the war, winning the battle. And the Rebbe explains that this is what Hashem does to us, this last generation. Meaning the generation before Mashiach comes, generation of Mashiach, we have more energy than any previous generation has. And all we have to do is sign up for the test. So this is what these 20 chapters talk about. We'll spend a few minutes, because it's already 9:51, a few minutes going through, and then tomorrow, if anybody wants to sign on, we'll do a little bit. And then next Monday, we can do also still before the yard site and finish the 20 chapters. This is a lot of concepts packed in. Impossible to do in three lessons, let alone more than three lessons. A lot of concepts. But I mean, the story I just told you, basically, at least you know the story. And then filling in the blanks, which is, you know, knowing the terminologies and the concepts and so on and so forth is very important. So let's see what it says. So in Shir HaShirim, it says, I've come into my garden, my sister, my bride. As I mentioned to you, my sister is a bad translation. It doesn't mean my sister, it means my beloved. Like in Hebrew, we'd say, Achi Achoti means my friend, my beloved. It's just a bad translation. I don't know why he translated it. He did a very good job on the rest of it. But this is, I've come into my garden, my beloved bride. That's what it says. So Song of Songs is not to be taken at face value. It's a metaphor, the relationship between Hashem and his bride, which is the Jewish people. And it says like this, in the beginning, the essence of the Shekhinah was apparent in this lowly world. It means Hashem's presence was here. But there was the cosmic sin of the tree of knowledge. So Hashem's Shekhinah departed from the earth and said, I can't take it. Rose into the heavens. Later, there were further sins. Cain killed his brother. Enosh worshipped idols. The Shekhinah withdrew. And then there was the sin of the generations of the flood. They were murdering each other. They were raping, robbing, pillaging, terrible stuff. Hashem went from the third heaven to the fourth heaven until finally Hashem said, I can't take it. And he went up to the seventh heaven. Obviously, in a metaphor. Hashem says, I'm not going to be, I just can't take it. So then, after these seven generations of sins, seven tzaddikim came. And it starts with Abraham. And it goes down to Yitzchak. And Yitzchak's son Yaakov. Yaakov's son is Levi. And Levi's son is Kehas, and Kehas' son is Amram, and Amram's son is Moshe. Moshe is the seventh tzaddik. The seventh generation is always the cherished generation. And Hashem says to Moshe, build me a Beis HaMikdash, the Mishkan. The divinity was primarily revealed in the Beis HaMikdash, and it says this in the Torah, make for me a sanctuary, I will dwell in that sanctuary. That's what it says in the Chumash. And in fact, this means not just the sanctuary of the Beis HaMikdash, but every single Jew is supposed to be a sanctuary. And the Rebbe continues that there are four worlds that we study about in Kabbalah, Atzilus, Bria, Yetzira, Asiya, four worlds. These four worlds are a medium for Hashem's energy to come down to us. They have to go through the four worlds. There is, however, two types of energy that Hashem puts into the world. One type of energy is the energy that actually goes through the levels and gets transformed in a certain sense by going from higher level to lower level to lower level, gets diluted in a certain sense. But then there's another type of energy that does not go through the process of these worlds and is just as powerful in the lowest of levels as it is in the highest of levels. That's the energy that we have to bring down to this world. The language of Kabbalah, language of the Zohar, it's a language of Sovet Kol Almin. There is two types of energy. This is a whole big discussion, which I'm not going to get into right now, but there is two types of energy. And the energy that goes through the world is not as powerful or as great as the energy that is not bound or diluted by a process of coming from higher level to lower level. The Rebbe explains the kind of energy which is called Mimali Kolam and fills the worlds is this so lower type of energy. It gets diluted. There's another kind of light oblivious to the limitations of the realms. It transcends them. And this is called Sovev Kolam. And this is the energy that we can bring when we fight against negativity. That energy is, that electricity is created by us pushing back against negativity. And that's why Hashem created the process of having a world full of negativity, only for one reason, in order for us to push back against it. So why do you have friction? Why have friction? Why not have something that has no friction? The answer is without friction, you don't create energy. From every time you push back, the energy that is used to push back against the friction creates electricity. And that's the same thing in the spiritual side. When we subdue the sitra achra, when we push back against our yetzer hara, we create energy, meaning we bring down. We can't create, but we bring down Hashem's energy, which is the higher form of energy, the transcendent level of divine light, so the kolamin. And this is what it means, they shall make me a sanctuary. What does it make me a sanctuary? We have work to do. We labor, we do work. Hashem says, when you push back against your yetzer hara, you are making for me a Beis HaMikdash in yourself. Meaning, just like in the Beis HaMikdash, there was this incredible intensity of spiritual energy that Hashem puts in. The same thing inside of each of yourself. If you want to feel the light, so to speak, if you want to feel the energy, just push back against your Yetzer Hara. Don't get it depressed that you have a Yetzer Hara. Be happy that you have the opportunity to push back. And when you push back, you will feel much more energy than just an ordinary course. And this way, the resultant light is enhanced, the glory of Hashem rises. And that's how Sov Kalam. So well, now we understand, this is a mission statement, so to speak, this first chapter. We understand that the essence of the Shekhinah was apparent in the lower worlds. The chapter explains that the purpose of the world's creation and Hashem desire to have a dwelling place in the lower worlds. And this is accomplished through our divine service by pushing back against the Yetzer Hara, pushing back against the materialism of the world, pushing back against the limitations of just being in a physical body, in a physical space. In this way, by pushing back, meaning doing mitzvahs, in spite of the fact that it's difficult, plain and simple. You do a mitzvah, in spite of the fact that you don't want to do the mitzvah, that it's hard to do the mitzvah, things are stopping you. You know, today we have much fewer things stopping us than ever before in the past, but we still have plenty of stuff. Usually it's now today, instead of a government telling us we can't do it, or instead of poverty stopping us, or instead of a pogrom stopping us, today it's all self-made stuff, but it doesn't matter. It just stops us the same way. And instead of allowing it to stop us from listening to Hashem and doing the mitzvah, living a Torah life, we push back against all that stuff. That creates an incredible amount of spiritual energy, the higher form called Soviv Kol Alman, the energy which illuminates all worlds equally. So that is the beginning. And we're going to do in the next chapters, beginning tomorrow, if anybody can tune in at 9:15, or if not, I'll just record it and think. We'll explain exactly how this works. The Rebbe goes through the materials of the Beis HaMikdash, the original, which was the Mishkan, and the karbanos and the ketores and the animals and so on. We're going to go through all this stuff. How, well, now we have the mission statement, but how does this actually work in the Mishkan? And then next week, hopefully we'll be able to just talk about the higher levels, which is how to carry this over into our own life, and what does it mean that Hashem gives this incredible amount of energy to us, this last generation, for Mashiach comes. So